This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Hey, gang. Post-con Steve Raker here from the Comic Book Bunker, along with Andrew the L.A. Rabbit, who's been to a con of his own. We've got these con experiences to get off our chests and into the annals of history. And you know how we do things. When we talk cons, we talk about the entire con experience and not just the Marvel or the indie angle. Right? It's all good.
Yeah, yeah. Although, there's no way I'm going to be able to discuss the entire con experience in mine, because there's no way one human being could possibly experience even a quarter of it. But I'll try and give you at least what happened to this little bunny down in San Diego.
Well, we appreciate your pithiness.
No one's ever used that adjective on me before, so I'll try and...
try to be full of pith. Don't pith me off.
And vinegar. Yeah, I'll see if I can be more succinct.
And you know that you can find us on Twitter at Steve Raker and at L.A.
Underscore rabbit
1.
Oh, man.
That's the one.
Remember, kids, always get to new social media platforms early.
The patent trolls are out there.
I'm sure there's a bunch of Steve Rakers out there cursing their luck.
Ha ha ha. Let them rake. Let them rake while I take the name and don't rake at all. Can I tell you a little bit about Boston Con?
I've been waiting to hear since you first mentioned you were going.
All right. Just got back the other day, although it's been a couple of weeks now at the timing, thanks to the magic of podcast recording. I'm actually on the beach as we do all listen to this, so it feels really good to be where I am. This is the time where I usually take my sabbatical and catch up on all of the reading that has backed up that doesn't apply to really either of the features I'm doing for any of the podcasts that I've been on. So I've got a lot to catch up on.
Well, make sure no one kicks sand in your microphone, Steve, or you'll have to send away for the Charles Atlas.
Hero of the beach. I went camping up in the Adirondacks for 4 days and was home for like 24 hours before leaving with my family for the Boston Comic Con. I managed, as our friend Dallin on Twitter said, to achieve a very difficult accomplishment, which is to do the family Comic Con vacation. Boston being the destination certainly helps with that, because we lived in Boston for about 10 years, my wife and I, so it's our second home, and she has no problem bopping around the city that she knows and loves so much with the kids herself while I was doing con-related activities. So it worked out great, and had my family there with me to enjoy when I wasn't at the con.
Well, it also helps that you have an awesome family.
Thursday, we headed off to Boston. The con wasn't until Friday afternoon, but great trip into Boston. You can park at the Seaport Hotel parking lot. Right under the hotel and the Seaport Convention Center at the World Trade Center in Boston is where it all went down. So it was all, everything was so close. We never even got in the car from the second we parked it the first time on Thursday until we left on Sunday, which was great. Boston's a great walking town and you know, city transit town. And for the con goer, with the hotel right there and the con space right there and the parking lot right there, it was just too good to be true for someone with tired legs. When we checked in, right next to me checking in was Jeff Smith, the creator of Bone, which was kind of neat. I didn't bother him then, although did take the moment to point him out to my 9-year-old who's read all the Bone books. And Stan Sakai was sitting there in the lobby of the hotel as well, letting me know that we were in the right place.
Was everyone decked out with appropriate gear?
Not on Thursday. On Thursday, things were more toned down as it kind of... the whole scene landed on the Boston area. They had a deal where you could go and get your passes for the weekend on Thursday, the day before the con, to help with some of the traffic as far as when you're first coming in the mornings. They had some trouble last year with everyone getting in, the ticket holders. So it worked great for me. I was getting my press credentials. I went and got my press pass right away and kind of peeked into the con floors. People were getting set up Thursday. And then, like, above the con, there's a connective like road overpass that goes between the hotel and the World Trade Center. There's like two stories of the World Trade Center that are open for business. And there was some big festival thing going on up there. I don't know if it was related to the con, but there was a radio station and a band playing and all people hanging out. And it looked like some sort of charity thing that was going on. I don't know if it was related to the cosplay booze cruise in the Boston Harbor that was going on from there or not. But it was definitely a happening scene. And that area of Boston, too, by the seaport, by the World Trade Center, is pretty smoking. I mean, there was chicks dressed to the nines and people getting out of limousines and stuff. And I don't think they had anything to do with what we were doing.
The connecting tunnels are really nice. When we went to FablesCon last year up in Minnesota, even though the hotel was not, it was next to it, but it was several streets away, it was entirely connected by underground and above ground tunnels. So you never had to go outside. I really like that. And I've also noticed out here, both Anime Expo at the LA Convention Center and Kamikaze did the pre-pick-up-your-passes-ahead-of-time measure, which I'm a huge fan of. It especially as cons have blown up in attendance these last few years, that is a wonderful feature if you're all able to get down to them. Because for Anime Expo this year, I heard people waited for, you know, 3 to 4 hours in the beating hot LA sun, you know, just to get registered, you know, just to get through the lines.
Yeah,
to
get your passes. This was Boston in August, so it was definitely beautiful weather. The breeze being, it's on the waterfront, so there's a nice breeze coming off the sea. So it was actually couldn't have been nicer conditions. That Thursday night, too, the family and I just went for a swim after going out for Mexican dinner. Saw Scott Snyder in the lounge and gave him a wave, and then swam until the pool closed at like 9. The next day on Friday, the family went off to do the Children's Museum or something like that, and the con was open 2 to 8 on Friday. But for the VIP ticket holders or the press, it was open an hour earlier. It was open 1 to 8. So I walked in at about 10 of 1, and they just let me walk right in, which was great. It wasn't like we were waiting for it to open because the VIP people were allowed to go in there to do their regular con business. So right away, things were happening, and Friday was like the perfect con day. The crowd was big enough that some of the vendors were talking about, this is pretty good foot traffic for a Friday. This is the first time that the Boston Comic Con had added a Friday part of the program. And, you know, you weren't bumping into too many people. It was a nice, tolerable-sized crowd as far as being someone who was just bopping around Artist Alley. And I was able to get a lot of business done, talking to creators, getting sketches from people, and getting sketches set up with people and agreed upon for, like, the rest of the weekend. All done on Friday, Andrew.
I think you kind of have to now. I think with how popular conventions are, if you try and breeze in Sunday or something, or even Saturday, if you don't do it first thing, you're going to be right out of luck. At least if it's as busy as you say, people fill up. In fact, now I've taken to suggesting if there's someone you like and they're on Twitter or something, it's almost a must to try and contact them, because a lot of people have their list filled up before they even, you know, open their booth up. So, because I know I tried to slide in a few times. I mean, I didn't try really hard, but I tried for Bruce Timm, I was curious. But even if I raced right now, by the time I'd get there every morning, he was filled up.
At the end of the day on Friday, people were still agreeing for things for the next day on Saturday. Like, it didn't seem like people were agreeing for the whole weekend on Friday. They're like, come back and talk to me in the morning kind of a thing, which I liked. And that seemed to be the atmosphere in general, that everyone was pretty much open for business and taking sketches. It was just a matter of whether you could afford them or not, quite honestly. You know, part of my thing is not bringing a lot of hardcovers or bookage to get signed, although I did bring a couple that I'll get to in a second. I like to bring I print out little mailing labels and make them like book plates that I have creators sign, and then I slap them in the hardcovers when I get back home. I'm not trying to make valuable books to resell. I'm just trying to make them, you know, mementos of having met the creators, you know, to me. In fact, I get them to personalize them to me. I met Mark Waid, super nice. Talked history of comics with him, about his recent comic book creator interview with Tomorrow's. That was great. How he always adds corrections to the comic-based software that I use. And we were just really talking about how, like, for us in the old guard who remember the history, we better get it down right before there's nobody around who knows, you know? And Asad Ribic, great painter, was there doing fantastic watercolor paintings. His table was like a work of art itself. It was such a hot mess of paint and sketches and smudges and all kinds of crazy stuff. Another fan came up and was talking to him about the Namor book that he did with Peter Milligan, I think From the Depths or In the Depths or something like that. And he said, oh, your underwater scenes were so great. And Ribic was like, it's just all blue, right? Nothing to doing underwater. And yeah, not quite. And he added so much tone to that book. Met Jeff Smith, got him to sign a book for my son, and like a bone handbook, which he remarked and drew a little sketch in. And I had him sign like a book plate for our school, because they put the bone books right up front, and it's got a pretty high circulation amongst the kids. My son found it without ever tapping into my love of comics to hear about it. By the time I mentioned it to him, he had already been halfway through all the series, actually.
He is such a nice guy. We had him sign a few things in Emerald City, and same thing. He does tons of little sketches on people's stuff. And the only thing with him is he is really popular.
Yeah, he is.
I don't know if we had to wait in a little bit of a line. I don't know how it was in Boston, but I mean, well-deserved. But such a nice man, always takes time with the fans. And I like just seeing a lot of young people. You know, he really seems to have touched with that crowd.
Yeah.
It was a guy in front of us who bought, like, the last print he had there. And he felt kind of bad because, you know, it's the show print or whatever. So he did a really nice sketch on the back of it.
On Friday, Andrew, there was not longer than a 10-minute wait for anybody.
Oh, my gosh.
And there was no ticket needed. You know, maybe a little longer than 10 minutes if, like, someone's doing a sketch and that kind of a thing. But
right.
You're never more than, like, you know, 10th in line. Let's put it that way.
And it's worth it if you're a Jeff Smith fan to go to that show alone for that.
Saturday, there were tickets that had to be grabbed. And Saturday, there were only certain signing times for some of the big names. Although Capullo and Snyder all day long, every day for the whole con, unless they had a panel, were at it. And they really had the longest line constantly filled up.
Oh, yeah, Snyder is crazy. But I really like the ticket system because they give out the tickets quickly, and you know in like 10 minutes if you're going to get, you know, you're not spending time in a line, and then they get up and, oh, he's got to go to a panel or You know, I don't want these guys not to eat or miss their panels or whatever.
And this wasn't just Snyder. It's Snyder and Capullo right next to each other hanging out, meeting the fans together, which was really great.
Because my wife just recently got into Thief of Thieves and as well. Kirkman's another guy. And she was thinking, is it worth it? I'm like, it's not worth trying to.
Jeff Smith was the other long line, like you said. Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti had quite a long line. They had to make like a little bank line out of masking tape on the floor to kind of weave people towards them in the right way. And the life-size TARDIS that they had that people were getting their pictures taken with, that was probably the other longest line in the place.
Jimmy and Amanda, we always go see their panels again at San Diego, Summit, Chicago. Yeah, they're just, it's great to see the two of them. They're really funny and witty. And also it's fun to see two people that are really into each other. Yeah. You know, you can tell they really still have that new couple kind of romance to them, which is so touching.
And Palmiotti was off at a lot of other people's tables visiting when I was bopping around as well. He seemed everywhere. Now, you ready, Andrew?
I'm ready.
I met Sergio Aragonés.
Good. He's always...
Several times over the weekend. Met him and re-met him and re-met him, and every opportunity I got to, it was great.
Another guy that is just pretty amazing fellow. The other thing I love about Sergio, which is highly underrated, is that guy is far and away the fastest artist you can possibly imagine. It's not just because I go to the Quick Draw, but when I was waiting in line and watching him do people's sketches and stuff, he can bang out a sketch in no time flat. And it looks beautiful.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he is so quick.
And so friendly, gracious with the fans and everything like that. Happy to hear how much I enjoyed his Sergio funnies and the Marty Feldman story in particular. And he was the first person I went to see, actually, because I did carry my artist edition. I brought it in there, I got it signed and remarked by him, and then I went right back across the street within 6 minutes, was in my hotel room putting it down, and then back to the con. And thanks to the press credentials, I was able to not re-wait in any kind of line and just walk right in each time, which is just fantastic. The access that they give the press at Boston Comic Con is great, really great.
Good. Glad they're treating you guys right. I was, I've been mostly under my own steam at these conventions. Once in a while I go for the press pass, but San Diego, I'm under my own steam. So you're just in pressing the flesh with thousands of other people. So I did not, I deliberated bringing the Thor for Simonson and the Sergio are the two I've thought about, but I just can't justify dragging those things around. There's without, like you say, a quick access in and out, you're just, I'm not a young man. I can't carry those things around. Besides, I'd probably beat the heck out of them anyway.
Now, I didn't bring the slipcase itself, but the other hardcover I brought was Mark Texeira's limited to 400 art of hardcover that was like, you know, signed by him and all that sort of stuff that I just ordered through Diamond years ago. I brought that, see if he would do a little sketch or remark in it, and he whipped out... Well, first he's like, yeah, I could draw, you know, a Ghost Rider or a Batman or a Wolverine. And, like, I'm not biting on any of them, right? So I said, well, how about Red Sonja? And he's like, Red Sonja, sure. That'd be... This was the most happy and social and interactive Mark Texeira I've encountered at any of the number of times that I've crossed his paths. And he drew an awesome Red Sonja in my front cover of the hardcover and made the poor guys behind me wait a long time while he was just fooling around and having fun and telling stories and whatnot.
I've had nothing but good luck with him. I think it helped that when I met him at last year's San Diego, or maybe the year before, I had just backed his Kickstarter. And so he was super happy and did a little sketch and took a photo with me and everything and was very excited about it. So I've had nothing but good, like that positive energy that you're talking about where he's really excited and a happy guy. So I know, look, everyone's experience is different, but I've had nothing but great experiences with him.
Other art I grabbed, friend of the forum, your friend and mine, Monsta, John Cardinal.
Oh, yeah. I'm anxious to see. I know he was teasing you on Twitter about showing about whether to reveal his work or not, and I'm glad he didn't.
I picked up the Doctor Strange commission from him, which was awesome. And the night before, he had posted on Facebook a great Cosmo, the Astro Dogs sketch. And I picked that up from him, the original of that as well, because it looked so cool.
Yeah, well, you got to put that up on the web somewhere, or tweet it or
I will.
Something.
What I'll do is I have a forum post on the Boston Comic Con on the 11 o'clock comics forums. And I will post a link to it. I will tweet it. I'll post it on Facebook. I've also posted the pictures on Instagram and on Tumblr if you follow Steve Raker, either of those places.
Oh, I do follow you on Tumblr, I believe. I'll have to check my Tumblr.
And another sketch I got, I had a jam piece that I started last year of the Fantastic Four. I had Sue done by Tom Rainey. I had the Torch done by Joe Sinnott on the bottom row. Well, I got Reed Richards in the upper right-hand corner done by Paul Ryan, who drew the FF in the 90s.
Nice. I was just the other day, I decided to crack open my Axe of Vengeance omnibus, which I had never read, except, you know, 25 years ago.
Yeah, he did the Avengers stuff on that, didn't he?
So, yeah, his name is in there. And I'm like, wow, I didn't remember the event so well, but... It came right after the Bloodstones event in Captain America, which I do for some reason strangely remember. So I was like, I remember that. It was that like six-parter and it had the little logo blaring across the top of the cover and everything. Yeah, so it's fun. Glad to see they're still reaping the rewards of their previous work.
When Ryan gave me the sketch back, he first held it away from back to me against his chest, and he said, I should have asked you before, but do you mind if Reed is smoking a pipe? I'm like, no, not at all. Because he did scientist Reed with the lab coat and a couple of pens sticking out of the pocket and a pipe in his mouth, right? So just as a fun Joe Sinnott anecdote to mention to him, I said, oh, you know, when Joe Sinnott draws the thing with a cigar sticking out of his mouth, he does a little smoke coming out of it, like making a little four, which is a kind of a cute touch kind of a thing. And he says, let me see that back. And he's like, we love a challenge. And he's like, something like this. And I'm like, dude, really? I wasn't trying to guilt you into doing it. I was just trying to tell you a fun Joe Sinnott story. But so I got Reed on there, and I didn't know who I was going to get to do the thing. Eric Powell was there, but he wasn't sketching. I thought he might have done a cool thing. But who to get? I had already gotten Sinnott. Well, Monsta told me that Simon Bisley, who was there, was doing sketches, brush sketches for like $40. And he had asked to get the Predator done. And he said, I'm like, well, maybe I should get him to do the thing. That would be pretty cool, right, Biz? He's crazy.
Yeah.
From his heavy metal work and stuff like that, I know him. So thought, well, that might be a pretty good idea. It was getting kind of late at that point on Friday night, and the crowd was thinning out some. And I thought, why make them wait till Sunday when I was going to have my family join me? I went over and grabbed my 9-year-old and brought him over to the con for the last 90 minutes or so on Friday night, which was great. Brought him over to meet Sergio. He remarked on the Boogeyman paperback collection that we had, and he's flipping through it. He drew himself dancing with the skeletons in the in the front of it, that the skeletons were already there, and he added himself to the row dancing, and he leans over to my son and he says, look, I drew myself dancing with the skeleton. Like, he got a kick out of it himself, And I said, there's this sketch in the back, just amongst the afterword in the margin, that is of this skeleton admiral. And on his shoulder, on the shoulder plates, are two skeletons that are like sitting there, and they're each saluting. And it's so hilarious. And when I showed it to him, he starts cracking up, like, and he's flipping through it and he's laughing. And he's done so many of these gags, Andrew. He doesn't remember them, and he's cracking up at them along with us. And he says, these sketches in the back are just like warm-ups I do. I've like saw it the one time I drew it, and it was so cool to share his artwork with him, in appreciation, because he's like, oh, this is great. So Kevin and I, my son, we go over to Bisley. And we are behind another person, so he doesn't see us. And he must have cursed more in the 3 minutes we were waiting than my son's ever heard cursing in his entire life. So that was pretty cool, because he's a pretty imposing, tattooed, wearing big leather wristbands type guy to be shooting that kind of language out of his mouth. That's a pretty neat source. It's not like a source you try to aspire to, but one whose power you're impressed by, Well, he agreed to do the thing for me, but he said he's got to do it tomorrow. So I'm like, all right, I'll bring it back tomorrow morning. I met Jeff Isherwood and got him to do a box on. I made two jam pieces, Andrew. I boxed them off into 9, and just like Chris Niesman and Jason Wood and Jerry McDade have done, and I've watched them do it many a time, or at least heard about it in Jerry's case. I did a 70s Marvel character jam piece of just some of my favorites, not trying to incorporate everybody, obviously. And in the middle centerpiece is Doctor Strange. I love Doctor Strange in the 70s. I love him in every decade, actually. But I got Jeff Isherwood to do Doctor Strange, and he did Doctor Strange in the 90s.
Nice.
He did a real nice one, too. And then I bopped over to an artist from Seattle who stuff I have seen and prints I have bought in the past, named Jason Metcalf. And he drew a really cool Moon Knight on that same jam piece. Nice. And then on Sunday, I managed to get Chris Burnham to add a Deathlok. So I got 3 squares on that 70s Marvel jam piece, which is cool.
Was he doing his 5-minute sketch thing?
Yes, he was. And boy, is he good at that.
Yeah, I see him because I think he just moved to Southern California, because I see him in a lot of the shows here. I've been tempted, but I just don't. A lot of times I don't know what to get. You know what I mean? I'm really paralyzed by indecision.
My other jam piece was a Uncanny X-Men of like kind of the Cockrum Burn, Paul Smith era kind of thing. And I got Tim Seeley to draw a Cockrum costumed Polaris. The purple with the almost Gila things on the neck sticking out. And the fishnets and all that business. And he was like, it's a crime she's not still wearing this costume.
So did you have reference for that? Or
yes,
was
I had reference for everything. Okay. Yep.
Yeah, I didn't know if he was pulling that off his memory.
I learned, well, these guys will look it up on their phones for the most part. But I learned from Jason Wood to always bring reference. It's a lot easier to get your version, the one that you want, done that way. I also got Tom Rainey to draw Kitty Pryde. So I got 2 squares done on that X-Men board as well.
Nice. You are taking lessons from the McDade.
Telling you.
I got
you.
To see all his work in Chicago. He hustles those things. And he is business when you're there. Like, he'll just run you right over while he's zipping around. He's like a whirling dervish.
The last thing my son and I did on Friday night before we left was we went and visited Paroline and Lamb, Shelley Paroline and Brandon Lamb, who are the artists on the Adventure Time comic book for Boom, and got them to remark and sign one of our hardcover mathematical editions, which was cool of them. Saturday, huge crowd. Again, I get the deal where I go in an hour earlier, but now there's no VIP thing going in an hour earlier, so when I go in, the place is dead, right? It's like a quiet, empty tomb that slowly is like building with buzz as it gets closer and closer to the time for the doors to open. They had a huge line of ticket holders and then a huge line of people like waiting to like buy tickets. And in that line is our friend Freaky Tiki, Tim, and his
daughter. Oh, nice.
They're like 20th in line, Andrew, and they wait 3 hours from like 8:30 to like noon. And there was still no indication of when they were going to start selling tickets to people. The con opened at 10. 2 hours into the con, they're still standing there, 20th in line, and they ended up bugging out and leaving. Later in the day, I did see them selling tickets, but there was always a line. It must have been related to the fire code or how many people they had in or whatever. But
so they didn't have their... Out here, it seems like the biggest line are actually the people that have paid but bought online. So you're saying they didn't have tickets yet.
They were dissuaded from necessary. They were encouraged by email to buy those tickets online and then jump into the other line. But standing there 20th in line, it seemed like a better proposition because the guy to just stay there because the guy said they were going to be selling tickets.
Right. Okay.
You know, he was afraid to jump out of that line and into a one with a, you know, 300 people in it, even though it was moving. You know what I mean?
Oh, no. I just 2 years ago, I think, or maybe last year at Kamikaze, even though I had the 3 day pass, the first day I actually just bought day tickets because the cash line was nothing. But if you had your internet, it took like 3 hours. So I just paid for the day. And then at the end of the day, got my 3 day pass. I wasn't happy paying for an extra day, but it seems like here, a lot of the crazy lines are actually people that already bought their tickets. They're just trying to get in and exchange those tickets for wristbands or whatever their system is for getting in.
Yeah. I spent like an hour plus with them out in line, so I at least got to visit with them, which was great, and I probably wouldn't have been able to talk to them as much and as clearly inside, because when I went back in, it was like a mosh pit in there, Andrew. It was like New York City Comic Con was a few years ago when you were there with Lisa and her friend from Boston, and we were walking around like in the retail side where it was really packed and we had to go to Artist Alley for kind of the oasis.
Right.
It had those moments. And I've heard New York Comic Con's got even worse since then, and it's more like San Diego now. But then it was, you know, just tolerable. And at the peaks on Saturday, it was just tolerable. I had to retreat into the peripheries of Artist Alley to get a little elbow room. But there was always elbow room to be found. Some of the families that were there and didn't know what they were getting into, you know, had at least a place to go where they could, regroup. To get around, you would just kind of, I felt like a platelet jumping into just advantageous circulatory streams that would send me in the direction that I kind of would want to go. And then I would like oxygenate the little area or the table I went to with my charm and fanboy love and money, you know, and then jump into another stream and end up by the liver, you know, whatever. I also picked up a commission, a color commission from Dan Parent, the artist on Archie. I got him to do a Invisible Girl sketch. That's great.
Oh, yeah. He did. He created Kevin Keller.
Right. Exactly. Heard a couple of good stories about Mike Grell, who's one of my favorite creators, at least as far as his output. I just love the John Sable stuff, and some of that Warlord stuff was very entertaining, too. And I even liked him following Neil Adams on the Green Hour, Green Lantern stuff. But it was funny because Mark Texeira just came back from a tour of Europe with Grell, and it was the first time he had ever hung with him. And on the plane, Grell was using this like telescoping cane to get around. You know, he's an older guy. And he forgot it on the plane. And he said by the time the 2 weeks was up, he wasn't needing the cane anymore. He had like gotten in shape with them and like and the tour, etc. And then the other funny Grell story I heard was from Tim Bradstreet, who was telling me about Jim Steranko coming up to a group of creators and laying some sort of riddle challenge to them that Bradstreet answered to the most of Steranko's preference compared to the other answers that were given, and got to go hang with Steranko inside and was bought a drink by him. And in comes Grell, who Steranko like unloaded on, really tearing him up, and he has no idea why Bradstreet, but he just couldn't believe like seeing his two like legend creators going at it, which was pretty funny. He also told a good story about Frazetta's last con, where he was walking the floor, and even though there was so much white noise in the room and so much buzz around, Frazetta was like this cone of silence, and like on the outskirts of it was everyone just going, "Oh, it's Frank Frazetta! It's Frank Frazetta!" You know. But it's fun to talk to guys and get those kinds of stories, which you kind of really only get at the con.
Yeah, the only time I saw Grell, it was years ago here in Southern California, and they put him in Autograph Alley.
Funny.
Like, it was the weirdest thing ever, because I think I was meeting Bob Bratal, and he was like, "I can't find Mike Grell." And I'm like, "That's because he's in the..." and so I took him to, because, you know, he doesn't normally walk through Autograph Alley. So I took him there, and there he was, because he's a big also, not just Longbow Hunters, but like, the, what was it, Warlord that he did?
Right.
He was a big fan of that. So he had some pages, and we flipped through. I just thought it was, I'd never seen, like, it was weird to see a comic book person in the middle of all that. But who knows how they organize these things.
A couple more quick hits of people, and I'll wrap it up, I promise. Met Neil Adams again and told him that I was going to introduce my son to him the next day, which I did. Talked to him a little bit about Batman Odyssey and stroked his ego and let him wax eloquent about it a little, because hearing Neil talk about Batman Odyssey is twice as much fun as reading it. And I did have fun reading it, but hearing him talk about it is really fun.
It's been on my sort of maybe list forever.
Oh, you got it. It's like you've got to read it. You'll like it. You'll like it. Andrew McLean, the guy who does the Headlopper book that's been out for a couple of issues, I got to meet him and talk to him a little bit. And I got to talk to the guys who are doing the Kickstarter for the Little Nemo oversized like anthology.
Oh, nice.
From the current creators that are all doing it together.
Right, right.
And also, on another area of the con, met Jeremy Bastian again and bought a Cursed Pirate Girl from him that he beautifully remarked for my kids. That was really great. And he had his page from that Nemo anthology with him, and it is, oh, it's magnificent. It's really cool. A print that I bought from Bastian a few years ago actually totally reawakened my interest in Nemo and McKay, and since then I've really been trying to get a lot of his stuff and really been enjoying it, so appreciate him being the catalyst for that and told him so.
Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned he had a one of the galleries down here did a display of Cursed Pirate Girl art, which was quite nice, and so we went down. It was only in there for a week or two. We didn't go opening night, but we went and saw, and it's amazing. He doesn't work much bigger than the, like, he doesn't work in the full size. Obviously, it would take him forever.
Right.
And it's amazing the detail.
It sure is.
He can get on the size that he's working. Because you think, oh, he must be working on giant pages to get that detail. No, no. He can just fit stuff into small spaces. Like,
he's got the hands of a surgeon, Andrew.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I did pick up, I think I showed you guys, I picked up that, I did get a sketch from him last year, a little harpy that he did for me. He was doing like 5 sketches the whole weekend, and I got in there.
Awesome. Also awesome was getting to see Greg Capullo and Scott Snyder, but, you know, Capullo is someone who I've connected with in the past and socially as well, so I appreciated reconnecting with him and got another invite to socialize with he and his wife, so that was way awesome and a lot of fun, and then I didn't bother them the rest of the weekend because I'll get mine. And then on Sunday when I went with the family, it was really crowded for a while on Sunday, but, you know, it was fun for the gang and fun for my wife even for the first time to get to see what a real con is like. And, you know, there was some family stuff of being able to pose, like, with the Ghostbusters painting of the, you know, the ancestor guy, or there was a life-size 3PO and R2 that you could pose with, and there was a mock foam trash compactor room that you could take picture in, which I did with the kids and stuff, you know, trying to brace it with the with the you know, big pipe and all that business. So that was fun to be had family-wise, and I brought my son in for the hour before the con opened on Sunday so he could get a sense of it. Sat behind the table where Capullo and Snyder sit and looked at the view that they must get and that kind of stuff. And then he got to see the place fill up, and I kind of appreciate that inside access that is rare to have, and I hope he enjoyed.
Oh, I'm sure he did. Besides, you're a great guy to walk around with. You're very knowledgeable and patient, so you have a good way of explaining things.
The last thing that I did, Andrew, was I asked a couple of the vendors, you know, kind of how their weekend was. And one of the guys taking old comics off the wall on Saturday night, I asked, and they said their day was just kind of okay sales-wise. The Marvels were selling, because the Marvels always sell. but the guys had Baltimore Comic-Con shirts on. And I'm thinking about going to Baltimore, Andrew, so... it's at the beginning of September, and I asked if they were affiliated with it all, and the guy said he runs the show.
Oh, nice.
So I met the promoter and the guy who runs Baltimore Comic Con, and he certainly invited me down to enjoy it. So I'm really thinking about doing that.
I have heard the creators I've talked to, a lot of them list Baltimore as their favorite show. I've not heard a single bad thing about it. You know, because this year we went to a few different travel shows. Oh, I always like talking to people and finding out what they like. And it's certainly on my radar to think about I might end up going. And I think this is the first year they're also expanding. But they've been around for, I want to say, 8 or 9. Like, they're new in some ways, but they're not like a new con. So I think you definitely are going to know. I'm sure, doesn't Chris Campbell go to that show?
Well, exactly. I'd be going with him. He'd be my tour guide, so that'd be good. And Starlin's going to be there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be a... I think you'd have such a good time if you can swing it. I would completely recommend, because now we're in sort of the golden age of conventions. I mean, people complain about attendance and population explosion, and who knows, maybe this is the new norm, or maybe in 5 years, you know, half these cons will be gone. I don't know, but I say enjoy the renaissance while it's happening.
Yeah, well, with my head, the last couple of years, other than managing Boston, I haven't been able to go to anything, so I would like to enjoy it if I can. Tell me a little bit about San Diego, though.
Oh, San Diego, San Diego.
Which, by the way, before you do, I got so many compliments on Saturday for wearing my Kirby Museum Kirby head shirt that you got for me that when I saw that advertised that they were going to do that, I was like, Andrew, if you're anywhere near booth whatever, I don't care the shipping cost, you gotta get it to me, I gotta have this shirt. It was my screensaver on my tablet for like a year, so thank you very much for that.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I my basic deal is I make no promises, but I'm more than happy to, you know, keep an eye out. And last year I had luck scoring that little Jason figure for Andrew Shaw down in Australia. So every once in a while I'm able to find something for somebody, but you just can't make any promises because San Diego is sort of a monstrous, ever-evolving beast where our general rule is we try and pick like one thing a day that we really want to hit, and then we have like 15 to 20 backups for different times and then just kind of go with the flow because you can't. I'm not joking. I don't think you can see a quarter of it if you went, you know, from 6 in the morning till 3 at night. You'd be lucky to get to any of that. So we had the full package, which starts with Wednesday preview night through to Sunday. So we stop at Disneyland on the way down and have fun there. But we left a little late, so we got stuck in some traffic. But we still made it down there for preview night. It's a little bit weird. Preview night back in the day was a much lighter affair, but because there's almost no other programming going on and it's become so popular, especially with the collectible toy crowd, it is just this crush of people. But it's like your first exposure back into the San Diego mess.
Welcome to and the jungle.
Yeah, and it's the entire ground floor of the convention center, and you just sort of get pushed into it. And I really had very little on my plate this year. Like I said, I don't really go in with a lot. A lot of it's just catching up with friends and seeing what San Diego has to offer. And one thing we did do this year was we actually checked out some of the offsite stuff. Because there's, I think it's called Nerd HQ, something like that. It's the one that's over in the Petco Park. So we spent some time walking through that. And there's always fun stuff over by the Hilton. They had this Batman zip line, and they did a whole Simpsons play area. Last year, that's where they had the Legos and the Batmobiles. And then across this walking bridge, across from Petco Park, they always have a big section with, like, Hello Kitty, and they do a bunch of, like, Adventure Time and Cartoon Network. And this, they were promoting the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. So it's just all these different weird giveaways and promotions, and it's just fun to sort of rubberneck and take it all in.
Sounds awesome.
So, like I said, I pushed for some things. One friend clued me into, you remember June Brigman from Power Pack, correct?
Of course.
She had a big stack of original art pages for $20 a piece.
Wow.
And I don't dip my toes in the original art just because it's pretty expensive, but $20? I mean, come on. So I got this nice page, and I like the ones that have the overlay. I know a lot of people don't. But, and it's got the ship Friday and the aliens and everything. And I was like, wow, $20. I mean, get out of here.
Cool.
Like, that's essentially giving it away.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I saw, Kevin O'Neill was back. Top Shelf brought him out because they were doing the special hardcover limited signed.
Nice.
Of the last three, you know, the century.
Yep.
So I got that and got in line and got him to sketch me a little thing in the book. Because, you know, the Europeans, they'll sketch in your books as part of the signing process.
So martial law?
Nice. No, actually, I got, because he had sketched Mina in one of the last time I had gotten, he was over here and
okay.
I got a sketch. So I put it up to him and he did the Antichrist. But I talked all about martial law when he was there. He is such the polite English gentleman, this old man. It's hard to believe martial law comes out of his pen, but suspect some of that might be Pat Mills' influence as well. But just such a nice, and also it's fun in the line because he takes so long sketching, you really talk to the people. And most of them are pretty, you know, if you're waiting in the line for Kevin O'Neill, you're, you know, you're an interesting person, I think, and it's fun to talk to you. So that was the sort of serendipity, like I wasn't intending on, and I didn't realize he was there, but you run into it and you're like, ooh, I'd be a fool not to have him sign something else of mine.
Yeah, and you know, when you're walking around a con too, your time, it's all depends on, you know, the stars aligning such that, you know, if your legs are a little tired, you're ready to stand in line for a little while, right?
I mean, yeah.
So, you know, if you time it and break it down and space it out, you know, your time in line becomes like little rests.
And not only that, but my wife had run into a friend and she was like, oh, I want to go meet this girl. And I'm like, well, you'll know where I'll be. So she popped over to the Hilton to go meet her, which is right next door. And I was able to be like, oh, perfect.
Have some real fun.
I'll be here, you know, waiting for my, and he's, you know, I'm Kevin O'Neill should take his time. I don't want to rush
right. The
guy's sketches in front. Like, I wouldn't want someone behind me being like, hurry it up. So I don't want, so, and it, like I said, just talking to the people was fun. And we found there's a nice view on the second level where you can look over and see about a quarter of the floor. So it was kind of fun to pop up there and just see all the action. I only bought a few books this time. I usually walk Artist Alley and pick up new stuff. I didn't go too crazy. I did go, as always, to the Quick Draw panel, which is Mark Evanier hosts it, and then there's a Sergio and Scott Shaw and a rotating. This time they had an old Disney artist there, and that's just fun, good fun. And before, it's always the Marvel animation. So I always end up sitting through the back half of that. So there's a new Guardians of the Galaxy cartoon coming out, Steve.
I know it.
I saw clips of it. What I thought was interesting, oh, they also had like the voice actors, like the guy that does the Hulk and everything was there. Oh,
cool. Actually, Hulk is not a bad voice, even though that cartoon is skewed for a much younger audience than us.
Yeah, I've stopped watching all the Marvel animated, which seems heretical. Only a few years ago I watched everything.
Yeah, well, a few years ago it was made a little more for us.
And what I thought was weird about the clip they showed from Guardians of the Galaxy is I couldn't tell the age. I couldn't tell if it was another Hulk thing or if it was supposed to be slightly aged up, because it was just a segment with like Rocket running away from these guys and they were firing laser guns. So I'm like, wait, is this going to be more like a 12 and up? Or I couldn't tell from that little segment. But I guess we'll find out. Maybe I'll give it a shot. I don't know. I'm a little bit burned by them, but I hate to write it off. And I don't dip my toes in the collecting pool, but a friend of mine did. One thing I advise people to do is on your smartphone, pick an app that lets you communicate with your friends in like a chat room type thing. And so that way with our crew, we're just shooting messages like, oh, I'll be at this panel in an hour. I'll be here. And that way it's much easier than trying to text or go to an open forum or things like that. And one of them was at the Hasbro booth. And he's like, oh, there's no line now because all the popular stuff had been sold for the day. Does anyone want anything? And I'm like, oh, I'll take the Infinity Gauntlet if it's still there. So I bought an Infinity Gauntlet.
What?
With the little figures. It's got the little Star Fox and Thanos and Nebula and all that.
You're kidding. That's so cool.
Yeah,
that was like a HeroClix thing or something?
No, no, they're the figures. What are those? 3.5, 3.25
Really?
So what it is it's an Infinity Gauntlet. Although mine is broken, Steve. I put it on and I couldn't control anything.
It's full size. You don
It's like a foam fit, like the Hulk hands kind of. You put your hand in it.
Dude, that's awesome. That's
and
so
it's
cool.
It's got the gems in it, but they don't work.
Oh, you know what? You need that one to bring them all together. You're just not thinking hard enough.
In fact, go
back and read that New Avengers and see how. Just don't break it like Cap.
In fact, it didn't even control my impulse to buy the thing. But then in the plastic bubble around it, it's got those figs. And Star Fox and Thanos both have a hand attachment that has the glove for the figure. That's pretty cool. And then there's a Death, and she has a human head and a skull face you can put on. And then Nebula. So it's pretty cool. Like, it was way overpriced at $81, but it was one of those things that I was caught up in the fever of Comic-Con seized me.
Sure.
And my buddy was there, and I said, oh, sure, go ahead, buy it. Yeah, so every once in a while you'll do foolish things. But it's really just great seeing so many of my friends. We didn't do any of the big Hall H stuff or anything. That required a bit more of a time commitment than we were interested in that year. And they had changed the policies with the wristbands. Well, with San Diego, a lot of the stuff, basically you sort of have to research if there's something you're looking for.
Yeah.
Or some particular element you want to do. You need to sort of commit to that. And this was sort of us just seeing our friends and seeing what the show had to offer. But Sunday morning, we did get ourselves over to the Sesame Street panel, which was pretty cool. They had, Grover came by and Cookie Monster. And, yeah, they showed a clip. They did a Comic-Con bit called NumberCon. And the best message was like, and during the thing, Elmo has a list of 5 things he wants to do, and one of the things he can't do. And they sing a little song about, you know, how sometimes you just have to take what it gives you and have some perspective and, you know, you're not going to get everything on your list type of songs. And I'm like, that is the best Comic-Con song ever. So it was just really fun to see, because I have a sentimental attachment, and also just to see young kids, you know, before they were taking some photos with some of the puppets and everything. And it's just amazing the sort of magic that those, what are we into this thing, 40 years or whatever of Muppets, and they still connect with kids and with adults too. And that was one of those weird Comic-Con, like, it's not, you wouldn't think Sesame Street and Comic-Con, but I really, that one I think will stay with me as the top panel I saw, just from the, and they had a cool little print about Bert and Ernie going to Comic-Con.
Nice.
And so those are the sort of weird...
I thought Ernie was retired. No? They have Ernie again?
Not in... They didn't have him live at the thing. Oh, they just had him on the print. Like, it's the story of the... And they were done as, like, little kids. It was a cartoony sort of thing.
Okay.
I don't really know the current continuity Sesame Street. I'll admit, I'm...
Do the grown-ups know about Snuffleupagus, or do they not know about Snuffleupagus? I'm not sure where things stand.
I admit I'm fully out of the loop on that sort of thing. But oh, and the other thing, I'll warn you, on your little app, if you're meeting someone and they say they're at the Batman panel, make sure you figure out which Batman panel, because I went up and went all the way to the wrong side and went in, and I'm like, I'm in the Batman panel. Where are you? And he's like, back right. And I'm like, wait, which Batman panel? And then I don't know if you've seen John Suntris tours with that late 70s Canadian comic book documentary. It's about 20 minutes long. Have you seen that?
No.
Yeah, he someone bought it at some library downsizing, so he's been unable to locate the source of the rights, so he doesn't put it up, but he tours and shows it. And so it's fun seeing, like, Neil Adams in a story meeting talking about Superman versus Muhammad Ali, with, like, Denny O'Neill's there. Then they cut to the segment with Steranko, like, and it's totally done as a private eye. He's rolling a quarter across his knuckles, and the Venetian blinds are slatted, and he's got the hat.
Nice.
And it's just really fun to see these people back in the day when everyone wore suits. And then the most heartbreaking part had to be this collector guy. And he had the stack of original art, and he was just explaining, like, these important pages. And you're thinking, man, like, I can't imagine how much that stack, the five pages he showed are all six figures a piece, you know. Guy's got to be a multimillionaire by now. And that he probably paid, you know, like, $10 a page or something for that art. It was crazy. But yeah, so that's the kind of crazy, fun, retro stuff you'll find at Comic-Con. I could talk for days about it, but I don't want to bore you. What I think the most interesting thing for me, the takeaway for Comic-Con, other than, like I said, the chance to see people, is it's kind of, because it's so much work to get tickets and then get a hotel, and then, like you, we just park there and don't touch our car till we leave. It ends up getting built up into an even bigger thing than it is. And then all the energy that people bring to it, it's kind of a really weird feeling. Like, there's nothing else that you spend that much time working towards, in a way, most of your adult life. You know what I mean?
Like Jerry Garcia used to say about people following the Grateful Dead around and stuff, it's there aren't war stories anymore for today's youth and people with youthful mindsets like us. You can't ride the rails. You can't run off with the circus anymore. But you can go to Comic-Con, and you can run out of gas or money, or, you know, have some kind of adventure or misadventure when you're out trying to meet up with your friends or get dinner that night or get a sketch. You've been through something when you go.
Right.
And there's always good stories that come out of it. And if you go with people, you've bonded with them like you're a band of brothers.
Yeah, and some of these people, this will be like the only time I see them. But it's not only the event, but like I said, just, you know, we all had to get tickets months ahead of time. And that was us talking and planning, okay, how, you know, I'm going to log in here. If I get tickets, I'll get you tickets. And then you do the same thing with the hotel. So it's like surviving three rounds of combat just to get to the thing. And that's the part I like, is that it brings, I mean, I'm sure there are people that do it all on their own. But we found having a little group helps, you know, increase your odds, because you get more draws if you have more people and all these weird kind of, and then you start strategizing, oh, what's the best way to get tickets and all that. It's this beautiful kind of giant experience that, I don't know. But on the other hand, like, some year I'm going to get shut out of it. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the year you can come to Boston.
And that'll be sad for sure. But it'll be the, I don't know. If you get the opportunity and you don't mind crowds, I really suggest it. And there's nothing, no experience that'll match it. So that's why I always tell people. But if you really have a problem with crowds, don't go.
Yeah, my only strategy for the con was meeting Sergio Aragonés and prostrating myself in front of him in honor.
He is so, like I said, I always go to the quick draw panel. He's such a, so fast with the pen and fast with the wit, like you say. He'll just, what happens is Evanier throws out some suggestion, like, what's the evil version of yourself doing right now? And then they just start sketching. And Sergio's always done first. And it's always just funny. Like, he's just a great, well, I assume, hopefully people checked out his Funnies comic and know, like, that's him.
There was, you know, a lot of biographical tales in there.
Dude, don't we all want Sergio to be our uncle?
So totally. I might have even called him Uncle Sergio over the course of the weekend. All right, Andrew, thanks for catching up with the cons with me.
Thank you, Steve. I really appreciate it. I was excited to hear about Boston. I gotta figure out some travel plans. I gotta do another con with you, Steve. You're just the best.
Absolutely, Andrew. We'll make it happen. Look for posts either on Facebook or on Twitter, or that will link you to the forum, or come to the Marvel Noise section of the forum for a link to the thread where I posted all my loot and a bunch of pictures of me and my family doing fun stuff, and some cosplayers even, and things along those lines from the con. This segment was brought to you today by the uncanny letter X and the fantastic number 4. Until the con crud creeps up on us all, make mine
independent.